Radio.
Renewing sacramental preparation. Engaging our parents and children in the life of faith. A presentation by Marguerite Martin at the Proclaim 2016 conference. Brought to you by Cradio and XT3.
So, I guess the first question I have to ask is of a personal nature. Why am I Catholic? So, for me, this became the big question. There was a time just a few years ago when I worked on an ecumenical youth team. And with it being ecumenical, it was after a few lively discussions with the people that I worked with, a decision was made to leave our church baggage behind and to go into high schools, state high schools, and present. And I thought, actually, we were very successful. And we called our whole angle as pre-evangelical. And it was through this time, this question was posed, why am I Catholic? I got a good insight to the other Christian religions. We had agreed on what our common belief was, and we had become very, very comfortable with that. But for me, the answer lay in the sacraments. And I grew to love those sacraments with a passion. And it's a passion that I hope that I'll be able to share with you today. Anyway, through this time, the parish priest in my own parish wanted some help with sacramental programs. And it didn't take us too long to realise how perfect this was for evangelisation. People came to us. They knocked on the door. They ran into us in the supermarket. They begged for their children to be in programs. How great was that? And it was a wonderful time sharing that. So after a stint in Hunters Hill, I was very fortunate to be offered a position as pastoral associate at St. Vincent's at Ashfield. I think because you're here, because you share this same passion with sacraments, I think it's, and we all come from different places, I thought it was important that you saw our place. For those unfamiliar to Sydney, we are an inner west suburb, very close to the railway station. Now, Ashfield is also known by the Chinese population for being Little Shanghai, with a proliferation of great Chinese restaurants, all with Shanghai somewhere in their name. So we have New Shanghai, Old Shanghai, Taste of Shanghai, Shanghai Nights. That's just four. So part of my role at St. Vincent's is RCIA. And one day, a beautiful Chinese girl, Wui, came to the door. She wanted to know how she could join the biggest organisation in the Western world, the Catholic Church. So I sat with her for some time and we discussed God, but truly she had no idea. She explained that there was no religion in her part of China and she had no concept of a higher being. But still she had this sort of yearning about this biggest organisation in the West. So I asked her to join me at Mass the following Sunday for the community concept. There just happened to be a baptism that Sunday and we met and I positioned her to be able to observe the font. I whispered, "Oh, they're bringing the baby to the font now." And she looked so alarmed. "Oh, they aren't going to make the baby drink it, are they?" she said. Then we came to the sign of peace. I said to her, "Say, peace be with you." Oh, she loved it. She did the row behind, she did the row in front, she did everyone to one side, she did the row the other side. Then afterwards she said, "So why did I want the police to be with them?" So many laughs later. But what was the best part about bringing we to Mass was that day there was a cup of tea. And I left it to the parish community to answer her questions. "Why are you Catholic?" she asked. And I can tell you, it really challenged those people that fill our pews week after week. Anyway, with Asheville being a transitory type place, I didn't see her too much after that. My role as, I just put that one in because it's so good. That was this year's RCIA. Isn't it fantastic? Isn't it a wonderful photo? My role as PA at St. Vincent's is chiefly to prepare families for the sacraments. I heard recently that the process is a bit like painting the Harbour Bridge. You've no longer sooner finished than you're starting again. And I guess that's right if one doesn't allow the joy of the sacraments to seep into your heart. I really feel I have such an opportunity, personally, to spend a few weeks of each year contemplating the intimacy of God in the sacraments, celebrating the Spirit in confirmation, and feeling the hospitality of Jesus as he shares himself with us in Eucharist, and sharing the love of the Good Shepherd, who will search for us when we are lost. It is through these programs you get to see the action of God in people's lives, mysterious and swirling. Part of sacramental programs is meeting the people, and everybody matters, absolutely. Everybody has a story, and we are so lucky to be the person that often that story is shared. They have come willingly to us, and they have come with their story. And that's what we've always got to be respectful of, that story. Reconciliation was last week at our place, and that's our poster, and there's a few balloons. So we come to the next part, and this is something that I think all parishes have some form of, when we become the gatekeepers, and not just any gate, the golden gatekeepers. The Pope has recently come out speaking about parish personnel who are the gatekeepers, that instead of being welcoming, warm, receptive, they can be overly efficient and non-accommodating. You can have the best sacramental program in the world, but if you can't smell like the sheep, it will not resonate in anyone's heart. Recently, I bumped into a man, a local barber, in fact, from my old parish. Oh, we had a great meeting. He greeted me and we got to talk about the kids, as you do. And he told me the weekend before he'd been at his grandson's first communion. And then we both remembered the baptism. And how times fly. His daughter and her husband had bought a house nearby, and then we commented on how very fortunate for any younger couple to have a house in the present economic climate and to have children too. He went on that when he and his wife arrived from Italy all those years ago, all they knew was it was about faith in God and winding up your sleeves and getting on with it. And then to look forward to the big celebrations, the occasions like the baptisms, the first communions, the confirmations and the weddings. Now that came from rage and over. I pondered this thought. How beautiful was this to celebrate and mark time with these stepping stone occasions? Then I thought, no doubt, we Catholics, we are the party people. These encounters with our God, meetings with Jesus, are the occasions to dress up and go on to party with those close and the family. So, how accessible are these sacramental meetings with God that causes us to dance, richer in the knowledge that our God dances with us too? Have we at the church become too possessive, become the gatekeepers, the perpetrators of the rigorous rule? Okay, ones that I'm familiar with, and I'm sure there's people there who've got others. You know the one when someone rings, oh, I'm sorry, you're out of the area. You better find another parish. What's your connection with here? You know, you've missed a meeting. I'm sorry, you're out. First communion? You have to attend Mass every Sunday. Otherwise, it just doesn't happen. Oh, you didn't attend Mass here? Have you got a bulletin of the church that you went to? Don't laugh. I know that. Then there's the whole area of children with disabilities. You know, you've got the younger one in a sacramental program, and then you realise there's one older and you go, oh, why hasn't she done? Oh, she's got autism or she's disabled. You know, how sad it is for parents to think that sacramental programs are academic exercises that somehow their child can't fit in. And that's because they've been hit brick walls since day one of having that child. And here we are, the church, doing the same. So many parents feel alienated with children with disabilities. So I've got on the table there this wonderful thing from the Jesuits in America, boxes, adaptive First Eucharist preparation kit, and this adaptive reconciliation. The first confirmation one is out at the moment for a confirmation in Five Dock. Was anyone at Five Dock last week? For one little girl who had come through our sacramental programs, but finally they'd found a parish that they felt comfortable with and that the older one could sing in a children's choir. But they were worried that Sophia wouldn't be able to do the sacraments. And I said, here you are, just give them this box and we'll go from there. And Five Dock accomplished that. So, there you are, all you clergy. You'll like this one. God's mercy has a time limit, and keep it brief. Now, obviously, with the spelling there, that obviously came from another country, so... Yeah. Right. It's always been my belief that with people in sacramental programs and the stories that you hear, you know, it's always about the love that is already established in a family. So some very wise person put me onto this site, and I don't know whether any of you are familiar with this lady, Judith Lynch. And she wrote out a little set of guidelines for sacramental programs. And I just think they are so true. That family is the foundational Christian community, the foundational. That family is where God is first encountered and imaged physically. Now, you don't have to be blind Freddy. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. You don't have to be, you know, silly to realise that when someone comes to the door after having a baby, how much joy this new baby has brought into their life. So parents who haven't darkened a church door really feel the need to bring their baby to be baptised. They might not be able to name what it is. It's that new spirituality that has descended upon them, this spirituality, the call to meet the God of love, to present their child to this God of love, this new love that they have. That experiences of life, love, forgiveness, community and symbol occur first in the family. It's always wonderful when we re-meet the parents again at reconciliation time. The call is still there. And it's a call that can be experienced and recognised in the rough and tumble of family life. You know, you make mistakes and you get told off and then you're forgiven. That overarched loving forgiveness. And God's mercy makes sense in the light of family. I'd like to share a story of a father years ago when I was asking them to remember their first reconciliation or first confession, as it would have been called then. And it was done in a New South Wales country town, and it was done by the school. And at the time of the first reconciliation, they were so frightened. Little kids, so frightened. And Father had disappeared into the box, and the kids were all lined up. So when Father disappeared into the box, one of them went into the other side, and one stood outside, and they all moved up the bench. But for the little fella who was the first cab off the rank, he was so frightened, he wet his pants. And the others all got to know about it because they all had to kneel in that spot. And it wasn't a thing of, oh, he wet his pants. It was, thank God I didn't wet mine because I'm so frightened. So this father was telling me this about his first confession. I'm going, so why are you here? You know, why are you here? Why are you going to put your little girl through that sort of thing, you know? You know, and he'd grown through that. But, you know, we've got to be so careful, you know, not to sort of impose things on families. That families generate their own rituals and liturgies. And there wouldn't be a family or a kid around that wouldn't be able to say, oh, this is the way we do birthdays, or this is not. And at Christmas time, we do this first, and then we do this, and then we do. You know, they're the things that families are good at. We generate our own rituals and liturgies. That families share values, belief systems, and stories. And it's through our First Communion program, we have week two, is one of the most moving weeks every year, where we have parents and children sharing memories. And the first memory, the parents and the children love this, they share the story of when they first met their child. And you hear the stories of it, oh, and I went into labour and then I rang my mother and then just got to the hospital in time and rah, 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 rah. You know the stories. And at this particular First Communion, we had a little girl called Gabby. And Gabby and her father, Louis, were there. And Gabby has spina bifida. And Gabby was in a wheelchair. Now, Gabby also has some sort of intellectual impairment. And she is absolutely devoted to her father. And there she was, looking at him, like he was a movie star. Just beautiful. So Louis shared with us how they had just come to Australia from the Philippines. And his wife had fallen pregnant. And he said, in the Philippines, we don't get to go to the doctors that often. But they had gone to the doctors and the doctor had recommended scans and whatnot. And quite early in the piece, it became quite apparent that this baby had severe spina bifida. And, of course, the option was offered. And they were also told that they only had a certain amount of time to make that decision. Now, this is through the First Communion program, can I tell you? There's Daddy looking at her daddy. And he said, they sort of thought, well, we're only here, we've got nothing. You know, the family's back in the Philippines, they don't know. We could just say, oh, we lost that baby, it was a miscarriage. And then they'd go, no, can't do that, can't do that. How are we going to cope? Oh, we'll be right. They don't have to know. They spent agonising 24 hours going backwards and forwards. However, Gabby was born. And there she was, still smiling at her daddy. And the spina bifida, they've dealt with. I mean, it's in fact, she had a spinal fusion just this last week, another one. She would be about 13. And the sadness is that she has found it hard to get into schools. But that night, that story bonded that group of 10 families in tears. I mean, everyone was just crying about that big decision that was made. And then looking at Gabby. You know, the Filipino belief system, Filipino values, the Catholic values. That at baptism there are no conditions attached to how parents will exercise their responsibility to educate their children in faith. So all you clergy here, you can probably join in. You have asked to have your child baptised. In doing so, you are accepting the responsibility of training them in the practice of the faith. It will be your duty to bring them up to keep God's commandments as Christ taught us by loving God and our neighbour. Do you clearly understand what you are undertaking? There are no heavy, heavy requirements. That parents who present a child for sacraments of initiation have faith, a sense of God, and a desire to be recognised as Catholic. Now, I'm going to tell you a good story, a bad story, and a good story. Through a reconciliation program some years ago, I was looking at baptismal certificates and found that one little boy was baptised in the Uniting Church. So I rang Mum, who sort of said, oh, she'd call in while she was picking the child up from school. And she came in and she was heavily pregnant. I remember sitting in the church and in a chair, and I sort of said, do you realise that actually, I've forgotten the child's name, isn't a Catholic? She said, oh, the minister said it doesn't matter where you get the baby baptised. I'm Catholic, she said. And I said, well, he's not. And she left. I know. And it's played on my mind forever. This year, I want to tell you the story of Thomas Yick. Now, Thomas wasn't in the sort of age group where we hand out the reconciliation. He was older. But he was anxious and eager, and he sought Sinead out to make sure he got a registration form. Thomas hasn't been baptised, but he's really eager to do the sacraments. And this is where finding out stories is so crucial, and not just applying the rules. Thomas's mum had been married to a fella who didn't want the child baptised. She was a Catholic. And she really desired Thomas to be a Catholic too. And she thought she'd missed the boat because he was now at school. He kept at her saying, oh, he wanted to be with him. So Thomas entered into the reconciliation program this year, and Thomas didn't receive, I think his name's up there, he didn't receive the sacrament of reconciliation, although he did go and receive a reconciliation blessing. Thomas will be baptised on the 21st of September with his schoolmates. It was on a school day, and he will be baptised with his schoolmates and his mum and his schoolmates are his Christian community. And then he'll go on to Elio's probably going, no, go on to do Eucharist later on in the year with his schoolmates, with his community. But it's this child's persistence and his mother's support and the fact that I've got someone like Sinead who is working in schools, who hears the stories and can pass them on, that is the critical thing. That parents have within them the religious truths to enrich their lives, but sometimes not the language to talk about them. Now, we know that. We've met those people where you recognise their spirituality. And it's, again, listening to the stories of that walk with God. I guess the footprints in the sand moments, if you like, in people's lives. And that we confuse faith with religion. So many people sort of say, oh, you know, I leave it to the man upstairs. You've heard that. I just think that Yu Mikai has brought out this Beyond Belief book. You read it? And he talks about five primary levels of meaning. Level one, something out there, too mysterious to define, possibly a life force, a presence of some kind, bearing no similarity to human existence, immortal, invisible, unknowable, ineffable. I know there's something out there. Level two, a supreme being with the properties of creator, ruler, and judge, to be worshipped and obeyed, omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. So then we have level three, a heavenly father, the supernatural version of a human father, characterized by unconditional parental love and care, though capable of stern discipline, tough love, and is accessible through prayer. Level four of this beliefs, the imaginary friend we can talk to, bounce ideas off and share experiences with, an enchanting blend of the human and the divine. And level five, a spirit within and among us, whose divine qualities emanate from us rather than coming to us from an external being or power. That parents need help to name, claim, and proclaim the sacred in the ordinary of their family lives. And that parents underestimate their experience of the sacred. That the church should help parents educate in faith, not the reverse. That many things the church tries to teach parents about God and faith lose their meaning in church speak. We all know about that one. So often we make those judgments about why parents are bringing their children to the sacraments. Oh, they want to get into the Catholic school or whatever. I've got another story from beyond. I'm actually a believer, sort of. I mean, I'm certainly not an atheist. I was raised a Catholic and I want my kids to have that upbringing too. But the thing is, going to church is a 2.5-hour exercise. By the time we get them ready, pile them into the car, drive there, get settled, go through the service, and then repeat the exercise coming home. We're trying to make it at least once a month now. Now it's more like every 2 or 3 months. It's too hard. Life's a bit out of control. I realise that. I come from a large family, but my parents managed to get us all to church every Sunday. The pace was different then. And my mother didn't have a paid job, whereas my wife has a career, same as I do. I guess something has to give. If we have spare time as a family, we're inclined to have a walk by the water, get some fresh air, buy fish and chips and have a bit of family time together. I'd give church up before I'd give that up. Does that mean we're strong believers? Probably not. We've travelled a fair bit as well, and that gives you a different outlook on it. It would be naive to think our particular tradition is the only correct one. To me, religion is a means to an end, and that end is goodness, I guess. Doing the right thing, being a good person. That's what we want for our kids, and we hope religion will contribute to it. But it's mostly up to us as parents. In any case, to be truthful, my kids have never really bonded with it. They like the Bible stories, but that's about it. I'll make them go through the 6-week preparation for confirmation. I don't think that will do them any harm, and it's more or less expected if they're going to attend a Catholic secondary school. Have you met that bloke? Sad, eh? That we can't pass on faith by simply sacramentalising our children. So often that attitude of getting them done. Now, we have a wonderful religious sister who works in a school near us, who works with a particular ethnic group, who is itching to pour water over every child's head as they walk through the door. You know, as if that would make the difference. I think that was, in fact, some of the ethos, the old ethos that we had. I know so many grandparents who baptise their grandchildren in the bath, you know, and that's the whole thing. But the truth is that our church comes wrapped in families. And the other wonderful truth is the waters of baptism ripple through our lives. And, you know, it's an arrogance to think that something that we do makes people presentable to God. It's an arrogance. You know, we are just underestimating the whole time the part that God plays in sacraments. So that wonderful thing of Judith Lynch's, I just think is just so good. You know, Jesus spoke to us in relational terms. His stories were about things that people understood, relational terms. His stories were from the everyday. Now, some years ago, I was privileged to meet an old Vincentian priest, Father John Halloran, who went, I'm not quite clear on the exact details of his story, but he went in his youth as a secret missionary into China. And he could carry no books, no Bibles, no texts, no anything. And he was a teacher. And there was something about John Halloran that made his students ask him what it was that he believed in. And so he did the illegal thing of having illegal gatherings to be able to explain his faith. He could tell a wonderful, exciting story, John Halloran. And he said he went with one gospel. And he said, for me, my gospel is the Sermon on the Mount. And his challenge to us who were listening was, what would your gospel be? You got no books, you got no... What would your gospel be that summed up somehow how you viewed God and Jesus, the whole thing? And for me, it's the story of the prodigal son. We use this time for a bit of a move now. We use this in our reconciliation program. So on that table, we've got some props. And we're going to ask those wonderful people that volunteer to use those props as we retell the story of the prodigal son. Okay, now we do this with the reconciliation and we pick on some poor hapless parents, and it always surprises me, it's always the quiet ones that do it well. So, we'll start. There was once a very comfortable family, a father and his two sons. The father in this family was very pleased with the beautiful home he had provided for his family and thought they would want for nothing. He loved his two sons equally and showed their photos to everyone he met. He promised these children equal parts in everything he owned. One day, one of the children chose to leave and become a rebel and wanted his half of the good things that his father had for him. He took his money and left the family. He spent all his money on wild parties. He's doing that well, keep it going. Drink. Big dinners. And kissing fast women. That's the best one, yeah. While he had lots of money and good times, he didn't think of home much. Meanwhile, back at home, the father missed that son very much. The other son comforted his father and worked very hard doing his brother's and his share of the work in the family company. The rebel son soon ran out of money, and his new friends lost interest in him. He started to think of home. He got a job on the pig farm and found himself eating the food the pigs ate. He knew now that he had made the wrong decision to leave home, his father and his brother. Meanwhile, his father missed him so much he would spend hours just gazing down the street, hoping his son would come home. Then one day he saw his son coming. Dragging himself down the street, the father put down his binoculars and ran to meet him. The son saw him coming and fell to his knees and said, "Father, I'm sorry. I've made a big mistake. I've spent all the good things that you gave me on what does not matter. Forgive me. Let me back home as your cleaner. That is more than I deserve." The father hugged and kissed him. The father was jumping for joy. "Come on, jump a bit more. My son, today we will have a big party and you will wear this ring." When the other son heard the noise, he couldn't understand. "That's not fair," he said. "I worked to do the right thing. He doesn't deserve this fuss." The father hugged both of them. "Everything I have is yours. Your brother went away and has come home again. We thought he was dead, and now he is with us. He was lost, and now he is found. We must all celebrate his return." Oh, they were very good, weren't they? So, evangelization, who do we minister to? The ordinary pastoral ministry. Those we meet in community worship, the people on the seats on Sundays, and also those of faith expressed in different ways, but seldom taking part in worship, the parents in the school, Ordinary pastoral ministry seeks to help believers to grow spiritually so that they can respond to God's love ever more fully in their life. This is the church that we would recognise. You know, these are our Catholics, if you like. These are the people that may even have their names on our databases in the church. But that's not the church. Those who lack a meaningful relationship with the church are no longer experience the consolation born of faith. And I love this part out of the joy of the gospel, that the church, in her maternal concern, tries to help them experience a conversion which will restore the joy of faith to their hearts and inspire a commitment to the gospel. In her maternal and paternal, we saw the way that father was. And the last one is those who do not know Christ. That's the church. And let me give you again my favourite picture of the year. Okay. That was some of the people that went through our RCIA this year. But can I say that of those people, none of them knew Christ. And what was it that brought them to the RCIA? And again, we don't go out and collect people off the street. It was their children. So we've got Jessica and Lawrence there with their little boy, Eric. And they put him into our school, which, by the way, is only 53% Catholic, right? Yeah. Because they recognised that the Catholic school was probably better than the public school on what they saw. And he was coming home and talking about Jesus. And they were thinking, who's he? No, I don't know him. And Lawrence felt that he needed to answer his son authentically. So he entered the RCIA to find out about Jesus. I need to know the story, was his big opening line. You know, no church speak there, was there? He wanted to know the story. In the middle there we have Grace. And Grace also, her son wanted to be part of sacramental programs. She was coming along. Okay, Marguerite, she said, I've done very well without God up to now. Tell me, why would I need him? Whoa, I couldn't answer that. But she kept coming. And then we have Della and her two boys, and again, the same sort of story. The people who don't know God. So now, my challenge, how do I keep them? How do I keep them interested? So while the kids are young and we've got sacramental programs, that's fine, you know. They don't feel that need to come to Mass every Sunday. Well, Lawrence can't because he's a chef and he works on Sundays. You know, that's my challenge now, is how to make them sort of part of that first group that we saw, not the disenfranchised second group. Otherwise, it would be just going backwards to, well, I did all right without him, so why do I need him now? You know, and it's those, that story I told you at the beginning with the girl from the RCIA, opening it up to those people who are the bums on the seats on Sunday, to make them in some way responsible to keeping this message of Jesus alive, to be witnesses to him, to make this community a warm, receptive community that nurtures and embraces. I've spoken about my needs. You also could do a snapshot of your parish and the things that you've been good at and the things that you've been bad at. You know, the Pope is so eager for us to extend ourselves into this evangelisation of those people who come to us. You know, and he says you do it with patience, you do it with love, you do it with maternal concern. You know, you are creative. You know, you don't do the church bit. You don't apply the rules because rules are made to be broken. And everybody's got a story. And you've got to be able to bend those rules around those stories at your own discomfort, can I say. The people that can't get to the Wednesday meeting but maybe they could try our Sunday morning or something like that, where it's uncomfortable for us. But whose hospitality are we extending? There is no one that comes away from a sacrament without receiving something. And, you know, that's what we've got to keep engendering.
That was Marguerite Martin with Renewing Sacramental Preparation, Engaging Our Parents and Children in the Life of Faith. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme, On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese, Australia. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit creadio.org.au.